Good morning, Alaska, and welcome to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Eating disorders are a complex and widely misunderstood group of disorders that affect people from all walks of life. Impacting almost 9% of the population, eating disorders pose a huge risk to those who experience them, and as a group have the second highest mortality rate of all mental illnesses, trailing only opioid addiction. On today's program, we are going to discuss resources and treatment options available in Alaska, and we will take a closer look at one group who are not often discussed, boys and men. Joining me for today's conversation are Jenny Loudon, co-founder of the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance, Becca Kirian, registered dietitian and executive director of the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance, and Grace Schumacher, who's a registered dietitian, certified eating disorder specialist, and owner of Nutrition Partnerships. Welcome to the program. I appreciate y'all for taking the time today.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, I guess let's start off with some introductions, and we can start with the newest member of the team. I understand Becca Kirian, the new executive director of the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance. I understand this is quite new spot for you. So can you give us some background and what led you here?
Yeah, this is my first week as executive director. I was a registered dietitian down in Juneau, Alaska. I'm not originally from Alaska. When I first came here as a dietitian, I started getting referrals across my desk about eating disorders. And I was like, oh my goodness, I don't know why I'm getting these. I don't know what to do. It was a little bit overwhelming, but I was like, well, if I don't see these or make connections with physicians and mental health professionals, like, how are these patients going to get treated? So I started doing my own education. Akita actually provided a lot of education to me, which was really awesome. And I got to work with a lot of really awesome physicians and mental health providers across the state to provide some outpatient care for those in Southeast Alaska. It was a really important learning journey. Really happy I got to do that. And when I saw Akita had the position open and I really benefited from them as a provider, it felt like a perfect fit. So I'm super happy to be here now.
All right. Well, welcome. We're glad to have you here. All right. And Akita is the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance. Is that?
That's correct.
All right.
Yes.
That's the acronym. So I guess, Jenny, you can take us in since you're one of the co-founders. Can you give us a little bit of the background and the history of that and what y'all are doing now?
Yeah, I am one of the co-founders along with Beth Rose. The two of us came together in 2019. We both knew each other for many years, actually, but we didn't recognize that we were both experiencing, trying to find support and resources for our loved ones who were experiencing eating disorders. And we also both had a personal history that we both had also experienced eating disorders when we were adolescents. So even though we had this long, 20 years of being in a book club together, we never talked about this. And so we both were kind of alone and isolated trying to find resources. And when we realized, boy, we could have been supporting each other, helping each other. How many other people are out there alone trying to figure out how to get the resources they needed? We decided to just start doing some research and figuring out what the needs are in Alaska and whether we could provide an organization that could help that. So we incorporated in September of 2019. And when you think about the timing of that, March 2020 was just right around the corner. And so we very quickly, we saw a lot of providers and individuals reaching out with needs because we knew that the gaps of care were there in 2019, but they became very, very apparent by 2020.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot happening with any organized eating disorder. Anything was going on, right? You just had to sort of find a provider who maybe had some training in it or...
Right. There were, providers here and providers there, but there wasn't this place. And we like to call ourselves, we are an alliance. We are this place where we're now a clearinghouse where people who have interest in learning, interest in being part of our growing alliance can come together and we become a clearinghouse so that we are better together than one individual provider trying to figure out what to do on their own.
Yeah, I think what I really like about that story is the idea of you and Beth sitting in a room together for 20 years and not knowing, right? And then that question, like, how many other people do I walk by every single day? Which is part of why I do this show, is the stigma and eating disorders, addictions. Those are two of the big ones. And that'll lead us directly into you know, our conversation about men and boys, because I think that's something we've touched on in past shows. We've kind of said, oh, well, men have eating disorders too, and boys, and then we go back and talk about the population that really gets the, I guess, the press.
The press and the stereotype.
Yes, the stereotype. So we'll get a little bit more about that after, probably in our second segment here, but let's get back to Grace Schumacher. How do you fit in with this crew? Are you part of the Eating Disorders Alliance, like aligned with them, or are you sort of partnering with them?
I was really lucky in 2019 to meet Beth and Jenny when they reached out to me, because I was one of the few providers that was willing to and actually attempting to specialize at that point in time in working with people with eating disorders. So I'm very fortunate to be one of the founding board members for the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance.
Okay, so you're on the board.
Yes.
And then what else do you have going on? What's the nutrition partnership?
Correct. Yep. I started a private practice so that I could get enough face-to-face hours with clients in order to specialize and earn that board-certified specialty in eating disorders, which is available only since 2015.
All right.
Through the International Association for Eating Disorders Professionals. So that's available for lots of different professionals across the board.
Yeah, do we have a lot of people getting trained in eating disorders in Alaska? I mean, are we having increases in numbers of providers who are available?
That's one of the things that Akita is working on. What we're finding is that more and more providers are now seeing eating disorders come across their desk or come into their room, much like Becca mentioned when she all of a sudden started seeing some referrals coming in. I think more and more providers are seeing that now, and they don't necessarily get a lot of training in their normal, whether it's your medical education or your therapy certification programs, whatever it is, there's not a lot of specialty discussion about how to help these people. And so now that they're seeing that folks are showing up, there are more people saying, I think I would like to learn a little bit more. And so we see more and more people reaching out and wanting to start that process. And we've got a growing number of people who are learning. And one of the major goals that we have is to try to help continue to grow the capacity of the Alaska healthcare system to be able to better identify, treat, and refer.
All right, so let's talk briefly about what are eating disorders? Different categories, just sort of the nuts and bolts of it. The 101 on eating disorders, who wants to sort of tackle that one?
Okay, I guess that's me.
That's Grace. Yeah, go ahead, Grace.
Eating disorders are a complex mental health condition. They don't differentiate between any socioeconomic or gender statistics. So they show up in every population.
It's equal opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah. With oftentimes very complicated medical presentations as well.
Yeah. Is that, are the eating disorders underdiagnosed or missed? Jenny, you just mentioned that people are starting to see them. Well, they're starting to recognize them.
That's correct.
Right. So we have different categories of eating disorders.
Sure. And eating disorders have been around forever, like since the beginning of time, and show up in those historical medical records, but aren't often very well recognized. Oftentimes there are ways of assessing whether or not someone's health is doing well, don't capture eating disorders. And so that's one of the reasons that they're not oftentimes missed. But really the big ones are the ones that we're most familiar with at this point in history: anorexia nervosa, mm-hmm. Which comes in different presentations, bulimia nervosa, which has that purging or a self-induced vomiting component, another purging type, compensatory measures, binge eating disorder, avoidant restrictive feeding and eating disorders, and other specified, which is kind of a catch-all, or we know what's happening, but maybe they're sub-threshold, subclinical.
Okay. restricted eating disorder. What was the term you used?
Well, there are a few restrictive type eating disorders. Yeah. One of them would be anorexia nervosa that comes with oftentimes that low weight or difficulty with accepting weight gain. Bulimia nervosa has the same kind of presentation, but it might be in a more normal weight, quote unquote, presentation. And then binge eating disorder also has that restrictive component with oftentimes then a binge afterwards. So, right.
And I'll just add one of the diagnoses that Grace had mentioned was avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. We often call it ARFID. It is also a restrictive eating disorder that can have very serious physical manifestations in the body, because if you're not getting enough nutrients or enough calories, that causes problems. The major difference between ARFID and anorexia is it's not a searching or a seeking for changing your body. So you may not have that pursuit of thinness, that pursuit of changing your body. So oftentimes it's more like, okay, I just don't like textures of that, or I'm just not interested in food, or, you know, so it may, the things that cause it that are kind of underlying may be different. So sometimes the treatment needs to be different. But it can have the same kinds of complications and problems that somebody with anorexia has.
Gotcha. But it comes without that seeking of thinness or that body, that distorted image.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So we sometimes call it like the very excessively picky eaters.
Gotcha.
You know?
All right. Well, that helps me, because I've always kind of wondered the difference. I mean, it seems really, anorexia is very restrictive, mm-hmm. but it's got another piece to it. Mm-hmm. All right. If you're just tuning into the program, my guests today are Becca Kirian and Jenny Loudon from the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance. I guess all three of them are. I didn't know that Grace was, but all three from, and then registered dietitian and eating disorder specialist Grace Schumacher. Today's topic is eating disorders, with a special focus on men and boys, which we'll get into in their second section. If you have a question or a comment, your participation is welcomed. If you have a story you want to share with us about your own experience of getting help here in Alaska, that would also be helpful for listeners. So our Anchorage phone number is 907-550-8433. We can be reached toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is to email your thoughts to line1@alaskapublic.org. All right, so I want to get into, we had talked earlier, we've done a couple of shows, and you had mentioned you guys reached out after we saw each other. I guess Beth and I saw each other at one of the functions here, I guess the birthday party. And she kind of mentioned that there was some gaps and some areas that y'all are working to fill. And so can we talk about some of the new developments and some of the educational opportunities real quick that are coming up? And then we'll get into more with eating disorders. But let's talk a little bit about resources and gaps and services, because like everything else here, availability and treatment options are limited.
Right. Well, I can start with one part of that. I mentioned earlier that one of the major goals that AKITA has is to help grow the capacity of the Alaska healthcare system to help other Alaskans. We don't have access to all the different levels of care. There are actually five levels of care within eating disorder treatment, everything from being in a hospital, just trying to manage the physical complications that occur when you are not having nutrition that is meeting your needs, all the way down to outpatient treatment. So there's five different levels. And in Alaska, we have the outpatient level, limited numbers of providers. And then we have a little bit of inpatient that's happening, particularly at Children's Hospital with Providence. But there's a lot of lacking in between. And so one of the main goals that we have is to help increase the capacity of our system. And that starts with helping have more providers feel comfortable and confident. We sometimes talk about trauma-informed care. You mm-hmm. know, it used to be that people didn't know what trauma-informed care is. And now everybody knows, if you're going to be a provider in Alaska, that you need to be trauma-informed. And not everyone is a trauma specialist, but they're trauma-informed. And so we have this idea that, like, everybody needs to be eating disorders informed. We do need more specialists. We need some people who can really work very heavily and do that work with individuals. But we also need, just across the spectrum, we need more eating disorders informed providers. One of the ways that we're doing that is with a Project Echo, which will be coming up starting next month. So if you are listening and you're in a medical field, a nurse, a doctor, a nurse practitioner, maybe you're a therapist or a student in some of these areas, or a dietitian, all the many types of providers who work with individuals with eating disorders, we encourage them to come to our website at akeatingdisordersalliance.org. And under the events tab, people can sign up. And these are free. There will be four different sessions coming up starting September 28th. And they offer 1.5 free CMEs or CEs. And these are great opportunities for people throughout Alaska. You can join from Ukiagvik. You can join from Skagway, wherever you might
be. That's great. Yeah, that's a great resource. And you said the key word, CEUs. Because
free CEUs.
That's for LPCs, nurses, social workers.
All of them. Yeah. Whatever type. If you're a doctor and you need CME, that will also be provided for free.
Now there's four of them.
There will be four different sessions. Yes. They're on every other Thursday night from 6 to 7:30 p.m. We found that in the evenings it's a lot easier for busy professionals to not be in the middle of their workday and have a patient show up, and so to be able to actually join us.
All right. That's a great opportunity for folks who want to get some information on eating disorders. And as I pointed out, like, I see them in my office, and everybody, I think every therapist runs across them, and just like addiction and depression and anxiety. But those things they're often missed. So I think that's important for people to educate themselves. How early can parents, if we're worrying about kids, how early can parents start recognizing or looking at disordered eating before it turns into an eating disorder? Or is that, I mean, can we look at patterns of eating and see things that concern us? And then what should we do?
Yeah, these used to be classified in the DSM under childhood feeding disorders, or childhood disorders of feeding or eating. So at this point in history, they're coming across as early as 3 years old, 5 years old. So it's early. And oftentimes concurrent with other mental health diagnoses, anxiety, depression, OCD. And those can be recognized pretty early in childhood.
Yeah, okay. So if I have an 11-year-old that doesn't want to eat, or a 8-year-old that's eating everything in the house, I mean, when do I get concerned? I guess is my question as a parent. And what do I do?
Yeah, I really appreciate that you brought in those different perspectives too, because there's the individual who might be concerned or express some extra interest in thinking about this. So that's taken a whole lot of psychological space and time that they're thinking about it, or interruption with other life activities. But you've also got the family component. Parents might be concerned, and that's a reason to seek treatment. And then you've also got this maybe medical provider that could express that there's potentially a medical problem that needs to be intervened upon, whether that's with a supplement or some other dietary coaching. It could be quite early, but any of those pieces is a reason to seek some treatment or some extra counsel, and preferably early instead of waiting. So this is not a condition that you want to wait on. It tends to get worse that way.
Yeah, I was going to ask, we don't have a lot of treatment options in Alaska, is residential stuff. Becca, do you know, I know you're new to the position, but are we still sending a lot of people outside for treatment, or do we have any options here?
Yeah. So I know at least in Juneau, I've definitely seen patients that they aren't successful in the outpatient level, unfortunately. So we do have to send some of our Alaskans outside of our state to receive the care that they need, which obviously is unfortunate. It's hard. You're maybe sending your loved one far away from you without a support system outside of that, but right, it's care that they need. And then it's transitioning back to Alaska and trying to adjust to an outpatient level of care. It's a difficult thing for families and loved ones, and obviously the patients, to go through.
Yeah, and coming back without, I mean, a network really set up, is there any... what are y'all doing to integrate people back in when they come back? Is that something that you all are doing?
Absolutely. So what we would encourage anyone who is seeking care, whether it's before they go to, if they have to go outside, or if they're able to manage it in an outpatient level, we encourage people to come to our website. We do have a section where we're trying to grow this list of folks in Alaska who are working with this population, because we know that if you are saying, yes, I think I need to get some help for this, the first barrier you're going to have is, okay, who do I call?
Mm-hmm. All right, so y'all are working on a comprehensive resource list of eating disorder informed
That's
providers.
Right. And it's a lot of times this is, you know, we don't make referrals. We can't, you know, we're not saying like this is a great person. You know, all of that is so individualized for individual patients. But we are trying to grow this list so that people know like, OK, I think I need to find a dietitian, or I think I need to find a doctor or a therapist. Who are some of the folks who are working with this population? And if you are out there listening and you're not on our list and you're one of those providers, please let us know. We're always wanting to grow that list. So that more people can find someone in their neighborhood.
All right. If you're just tuning into the program, my guests today are Jenny Loudon, co-founder of the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance, Becca Kirian, registered dietitian and the new executive director of the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance, and Grace Schumacher, who is a board member of the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance, a registered dietitian and a certified eating disorder specialist. Today we are discussing eating disorders, and after this short break, we will get into talking about eating disorders, particularly in men and boys. So if you have a question or a comment about today's program, you can call us in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, and you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll return for more of our conversation. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Quality childcare creates futures for families, children, and the state's economy. When children are safe, engaged, and learning, parents can work and everyone has a better outcome. Thread has resources to support your family in their childcare search. Knowing what to look for in a licensed facility is important for the safety of your children. Thread also offers parenting resources and support. To learn more about quality childcare in Alaska, visit threadalaska.org. This message sponsored by Thread.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in to the program, my guests today are Jenny Loudon, who is one of the co-founders of Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance, Becca Kirian, who is the new executive director for the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance, and Grace Schumacher, who is a board member also with the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance. If you want to participate in today's show, our Anchorage phone number is 907-550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, you can be reached toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. Or you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so boys and men, this is something that we've touched on briefly. We've never really got into it, so I'm excited. As a man, like, I'm curious, like, how is it's not talked about? It's not seen much. I don't think about it in men. Mm-hmm. That's sort of maybe the bias or one mm-hmm. of the problems here. So I guess let's start off with, like, what are the numbers? What are the prevalence of eating disorders in men? Do we have an accurate picture? Are they horribly underdiagnosed? I mean, is another question I have. Lots of questions. So what's the difference in boys and girls, like, I guess, to start us off?
Well, I want to just start by saying I'm really excited about this conversation because we don't talk about it enough. There's a term that we use often in the eating disorders field of what is this stereotype of somebody who has an eating disorder, and we call it the swag. And the swag is the skinny, white, adolescent girl. And so when we have this idea in our head of the swag, the mm-hmm. person who is likely to be diagnosed with an eating disorder, anytime you don't meet one of those criteria of, well, I'm not skinny, so obviously I can't have an eating disorder. I'm not white. Okay, well, does that mean that I can or I can't? So the more of those pieces and criteria that you don't meet, it can be easy for the person to say, well, I can't have an eating disorder, or I'm not worthy of treatment. And it also means that providers who are working with them are less likely to see somebody and see the exact same behaviors that they might see in somebody who's a skinny white adolescent girl, and see them as being disturbing behaviors or complicated behaviors in that person, and not be able to then recognize them that in somebody who's a boy, mm-hmm. for instance,
right.
that those behaviors are also equally problematic. And so I'm really glad that we're out here starting to have this conversation to combat that swag stereotype.
All right. Does anybody have any numbers on boys? Do we have an estimate on the prevalence of this? I know it says 9% in the general population, which is 1 out of 10, which I don't know that 1 out of 10 are getting help for it. It's like 25% of people with alcohol problems get help for it. So what are the numbers of boys?
Yeah, in the U.S., about 1 in 3 people struggling with an eating disorder is male, and we've also seen hospitalization of treatment for men increase by like 53% from 1999 to 2009. So who knows from 2009 to now what that rate looks like. I think it's, I would guess, probably higher, especially with social media and just the increased presence of body image concerns.
All right, so that's an interesting, I mean, that's a huge increase, and it's probably recognition, education. What do we sort of attribute that to?
I would say one of the problems that we had early on in the field is that even in how we determined what was a diagnostic criteria for anorexia, for instance, part of the diagnostic criteria was amenorrhea for 3 months or more. Mm. Well, obviously, that's not something that men and boys are concerned about. That's not something that... Check that one off, right. And so even in terms of the history of how we conceptualized, again, because of this swag stereotype, even in terms of the diagnostic criteria, the diagnostic criteria was not really broad enough to consider all the ways that this might show up in men and boys. And so I think we have sometimes baked into even our own tools and our own assessments things that are not accurate for helping us to see when boys and men are suffering. And so I think part of this growth is also, you know, we now have the DSM-5, and the DSM-5 took out that requirement. And so now we're starting to see the field catching up with the realities that have been there through history.
Right, that's the education piece. And I mean, you know, once ADD became a thing, and then you saw huge increases in the diagnosis, it's not because we had more of it. It's because it was being identified and seen. All right, we have a caller here calling from Anchorage. Is it Chloe?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. You're on line one.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, you know, I've had athletic boys in my family, and come about the time when they want to make a team or something, they're trying to get bigger and gain weight. And the issue has been that in trying to gain weight, they start to get a gag reflex with food. Hmm. And so then that gag reflex can kind of get out of control, where every time they try to eat, if they eat a lot, you know, they get to a point where they just start to have the gag reflex. And it seems to be, again, something that is with their body, too, because they're trying to build their body into a bigger body so that they can, you know, compete at the same level as others.
Yeah, that's a good question. They're trying to bulk up.
Yes.
The term.
Yeah, this is a really important differentiation between what we might see in the typical swag population or the typical female population with eating disorders, is that for a lot of males, the predominant and driving factor isn't weight loss or extreme thinness. It's maybe more pertaining to body type, muscularity, something that's even like body dysmorphia or muscle dysmorphia might show up. That drive for muscularity, that drive for what is portrayed as an ideal male body, isn't necessarily very, very thin. And so this presentation that the caller mentions about male athletes particularly trying to bulk up, yeah, absolutely, that's part of this eating disorder's presentation. When it comes to that gag reflex...
what's that? That's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know exactly where that's coming from, but that is something that I've noticed, and that's why I'm pursuing my doctorate in occupational therapy with swallowing and feeding disorders, because I've noticed this this overlap, not just with the male athletes who are trying to bulk up, but like across the board. And so I'm wondering if that might be actually a feeding disorder that's developed in childhood and hasn't been treated yet.
Chloe, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Is that something that all... like you noticed in more than one of your boys? It was just one.
I've had two boys that have had it, and they've had friends that, you know, have shyly admitted that they too had it too, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's with this drive to, you know, meet the standards of a athletic team or to to bulk up and eat more than they can possibly eat, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's also the protein drinks and all that that go into it. Just when a coach might challenge you to gain 20 pounds, and then you could be a better player on the team because you have everything but the body type.
That sounds really... thank you for that call, Chloe, because that sounds really similar to the conversations that coaches have with the girls, but in the opposite direction.
Exactly, exactly. Right?
Oh, if you could slim down, if you could get faster. Like, but yeah, for boys, it's bulk up. You got to put on 20 pounds of muscle. Or I guess in the wrestling world, you got to drop weight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is exactly what Grace said. This is a really key issue for men and boys in terms of presentation of how sometimes eating disorders show up. Sometimes it is that drive for thinness. Sometimes they do want to look smaller, and there's lots of reasons for that that we can get into. But a lot of times it also can show up as this drive for lean, a lean muscular body type. And the main thing that though that shows up is that drive really does start to take over their life, right? It's taking up a huge percentage of the real estate in their brain, really starting to interrupt their ability to think about other things, to do things with friends and family. So it is starting to interrupt daily living because of this drive and the changes that you're doing to your food intake in order to achieve this, you know, quote unquote, ideal body. What the caller mentioned, this drive for muscularity, sometimes in the media we coin it. This is not an official diagnosis, but they kind of sometimes call it big orexia.
Big orexia.
Big orexia.
Is just getting more and more swole.
Exactly. And what she mentioned about the protein is very similar. If you've noticed, if you go to the grocery store now, you'll see it everywhere. Everything is extra protein, protein added, protein this, protein that. There's a lot of marketing that's going into this to help people become that more muscularity, kind of in the same way that in the past we might have seen low fat.
Mm-hmm.
For weight loss. Now it's like the protein.
Which turns out to be not so good, the low-fat stuff, right?
Same with some of these just muscular, you know, add muscularity at all costs. Similar problems.
I mean, I'm a man, and I would like to have the ideal male body. I do not. Like, what's the difference, like, between somebody who's like, oh, I'd like to drop 15 pounds, I'd like to get in better shape, and somebody who's went over into an eating disorder? How do you know the difference?
I see that difference really showing up as an acceptance of reality, or an ability to accept the constraints of what's realistic for a body or for a lifestyle.
So if you have this distorted idea that you want to be this certain way, like every man in my family has exactly the same body, right? There is some genetics to it.
Like, absolutely.
The uncles, the dad, like the brother, it's all the same. It's the same. And it's not the, you know, but there are some constraints, right? So I think genetics plays a huge role into body type, just like if, you know, personality, anxiety disorders. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an acceptance of reality. It's a radical acceptance. Like, it is what it is. Or learning to love yourself as you are. I mean, there's so much pressure.
Or at least to be compassionate to who you are. You don't have to love it. You know, very few people are like, I love every aspect of my body. So if we said that body love was the requirement, not many people would meet that. But there is a certain amount of body acceptance of just like, yep, I wish I had a six pack, and I'm an okay person if I don't have a six pack. Like, whether I have a six pack or not does not impact my value as a person, whether I am able to enjoy life, and is my pursuit of that body really getting, some idealized body really getting in the way? So it's like, no, I can't go eat with my friends because that's not going to be this very specialized, rigid rules that I have around, around food and exercise. Exercise can become part of that as well.
All right. So are there certain groups, I guess, in boys that are at higher risk that parents should know about? And what is that? What are those groups and what should people be looking for?
Yeah, athletes in general, especially weight-based sports or sports that have kind of a physique component. So if you or your child participates in a weight-based sport, definitely being aware that that's a higher risk population. So like wrestling or like gymnastics, more physique-based, those are definitely higher risk groups.
Swimmers,
mm-hmm. for sure. There's also endurance sports are also mm-hmm. at higher risk because there is this belief mindset in some people that if they are leaner or smaller, that they will be able to run longer or faster. So cross-country running, cross-country skiing, or long-distance swimming could also fall into those, as well as other aesthetic sports where just there's some subjective amount of thought about what the right body is for that athletic competition. So that would include things like ice skating, dancing. If you want to be a ballerina, those kinds of things.
I mean, there are some, certain truths to the fact that, you know, if you're playing football, I guess that would also be considered a weight-based sport in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. That whole bulking up idea and the pressure to add mm-hmm. more muscle and to, you know, to get mm-hmm. bigger, but also get faster. Is that pressure starts pretty early now. It used to not be quite the same, but now you got 10-year-olds in comp, whatever, year round, they're doing gymnastics 5 days a week, they're, you know, like all that pressure. So for boys, like what age do we, I mean, you mentioned 3 years old is pretty early, but I don't know many parents that are too worried unless their kid won't eat anything, right? Like, because I mean, kids can be picky, that can be, or they just don't like certain things. But in boys, what are we looking at is like when we should start and what kind of signs and symptoms in that adolescent, pre-adolescent kind of age group that when parents can really start tuning in to their sons.
Mm-hmm. So the rates of eating disorders for males and females are identical until puberty. And at that point in time, we start to see some differentiation where the more purely restrictive eating disorders are more predominant, about halfway more predominant in females than males. And the other eating disorders that have a binge component to them tend to be more predominant for males. And similarly, for transgender males, those who present with a binge-type eating disorder have about roughly 10 to 20% increased rates of purging and compensatory purging behaviors, like using diet pills, laxatives, steroids, or some of those muscle-building things, too.
All right, so we can start looking for it. There's a sort of a differentiation. Obsessive compulsive eating disorder, like binge eating, is that, are those interchangeable terms?
Not necessarily.
What's the difference?
Well, obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, is its own diagnosis. It's often found in conjunction with an eating disorder, but there's not an eating disorder called obsessive compulsive eating disorder.
Okay.
Eating, yeah. Binge eating disorder sometimes will have an obsessive quality to it, but not necessarily always. So they are quite different.
I just think about the kid who just eats all the time and can't stop and gains a whole bunch of weight and doesn't feel good about themselves and really struggles with that. I mean, that happened to me in middle school. Like, I put on a whole bunch of weight really quickly, and then, you know, on the soccer field, some kid called me fat, and it really, like, I was like, what? Like, I was a high school soccer player. But that was a huge toll. I still remember that kid telling me that.
So really thinking about that developmentally, right?
Yeah.
You're at that age where we
like
would expect
15.
To have a growth spurt in stature. Your height is changing pretty rapidly, but maybe not yet. And that's the way that human beings develop as we get outward circumference-wise before we have a growth spurt. So there can be a lot of extra pressure on body, and there's kind of that increase in bullying around that too at those ages.
And in boys, bullying is incredibly impactful on their psychological development, their self-esteem, their self-worth. And so things like targeting boys around weight is a really huge deal.
Yeah, when you look at the risk factors for boys and men with eating disorders, weight-based bullying is one of the top risk factors for a boy or man developing an eating disorder. So that we really do need to step in. And if we see that as an adult, it is not okay. We just really have to put a ban to any of those kinds of talks. It really is, can be something that, just like you still remember that, you know, all these years later, those things are impactful. So we really do have to stop when we see that happening.
Yeah. For boys, that it takes a special toll, that sort of bullying. I don't know the number of young men that, you know, 14, 15, that come into my office and they're worried because they're fat. Right. I hear that all the time. Like, oh, I really got to slim down. I got to like bulk up. And they're feeling really bad. And some of the heavier boys are really struggling emotionally.
Absolutely. And I will say that is also another one of the other big risk factors for boys and men. So weight-based bullying, but also they're more likely to have lived in a higher weight body at some point in their life. So those two together are risk factors that start to create higher risk that man or boy will develop an eating disorder.
They lived in a higher weight body.
Yep.
Interesting way to, I hadn't heard that term. Mm-hmm. Okay, we are up against our second break. If you're just tuning into the program, my guests are Jenny Loudon from, Jenny Loudon, Becca Kirian, and Grace Schumacher from the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance. We are talking about eating disorders and taking a little deeper look at men and boys. So if you would like to share your thoughts, you're going to have to get in the next 10 minutes or so. People usually often call in at like with 3 minutes left and I can't get them on. So go ahead and call us up in the next, you know, 5 or 6 minutes if you want to get on the air. After this short break, we'll return for more of our conversation with Beth Rose. Oh no, Beth Rose is not here. That's an old copy. with my guests from the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Strong connections can help people thrive during tough times. Whether it's spending quality time with loved ones, finding peace in nature, or the unconditional love of furry companions, these connections help people stay present and have healthier relationships with ourselves and others. Share what makes you feel connected at ChooseConnectionAK.org. This message sponsored by the Alliance.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning into the program, my guests are Jenny Loudon, Becca Kirian, and Grace Schumacher from the Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance. If you have a question or a comment for us today, please give us a call in the next 5 or 6 minutes. Our Anchorage number is 907-550-8433. Toll free, we are at 1-888-353-5752, or you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. All right. So if somebody is concerned as a man that they might have an eating disorder, what would they do? Who would they talk to? What would you do? Like, how would you know? And then where would you go?
I think if you're seeking help, it's a great first step. Maybe you're already seeing a dietitian or a therapist or a doctor. Any one of those people is a good one to at least start that conversation. And then hopefully you can get connected with a medical professional, a mental health professional, and a nutrition professional. But the really big first step is just at least getting connected with someone. On our website, they do have a list of providers in Alaska, mental health, medical, and nutrition professionals. So I would encourage people that feel maybe they're ready to take that step to take that step and get connected with someone.
All right, so let me ask y'all this. If you're like, let's say I'm a 56-year-old man sitting at home listening to the radio, right? And I've had up and down weight loss, you know, throughout my whole life. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening and I'm thinking, I wonder if that is what's happening. Like, how would I transition at that age, like, to thinking about it? Why would I think that I might have a eating disorder? What are the things I would see in myself, I guess?
I would be asking myself, so how much, again, I think one of the big questions is, how much real estate is this taking in my life?
Okay.
So is this getting in the way of, am I constantly thinking about what the next meal is? Am I constantly thinking about food, body shape, size, calories, all of those things? So the more that those start taking up the space in your brain, I'd be concerned. I would also be concerned if all of a sudden you're like, yeah, but I can't go to that family dinner because they aren't going to have the right kinds of foods that are going to allow me to participate in that. And so they're starting to isolate themselves, take themselves away. And I think the other thought is, like, how much shame do I have around my body, and how much shame am I feeling about my food choices? Because we know that shame is toxic. It is a terrible motivator. It really provides no benefit in your life. And so the more shame that you're feeling about your body, whether or not you meet the diagnostic criteria for an eating disorder or not, I'd say you could probably benefit from talking with somebody, from getting some help that would help you to not feel that shame about your body
and also sort of evaluate your relationship with food.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty common for people to, like, feel, you know, I got to lose some weight and then eat a pint of ice cream, like, that night, like, or is it all this, like, negative self-talk? So really it's about the amount of, I like the way you put it, real estate it takes up in your mind. All right, so we have a couple callers. Thank you for listening and calling in before the last 2 minutes. Ellen, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi. I think that while I was on hold, I think it was probably discussing about what I was going to call about anyway. But, yeah, I've got a husband in his late 50s, and I know that, you know, he still carries baggage from when he was a kid. And, yes, I think his family had terrible eating habits. Or not terrible, but not ideal. And I think that they didn't really show him what normal people eat as far as quantities. Is there a way that you have to suggest? I've tried to say, oh, you know, this is, you know, he sees what our kids and what I eat. And I have told him, I said, I always start with giving you twice as much as I give anyone else. And it's still not enough. And I'm just, is there some gentle way that I can maybe help process what normal sizes are? Does that make sense?
That absolutely makes sense. Actually, a lot of times we see for males that males who are athletic or males who have higher metabolisms or are active or have busy jobs in adolescence and early adulthood don't change their eating patterns when they age. And so that can be really problematic. In terms of having that discussion, this is a difficult one, but to recognize that nutrition needs change over time might be a reason to visit your nutrition professional and have an assessment about what does it look like? What does food look like visually that needs to happen now to meet your energy needs?
Okay.
I really appreciate that call, because I think that is at the heart of kind of what we're talking about, which is that difficulty of bringing this stuff up. And it's often other people who notice this, you know, just like if it's drinking or, you know, something else, other people will have some concerns about it. And, you know, I mean, it's usually men in my office that say to their wives, like, well, she's put on a lot of weight. And I'm like, ooh, like, I mean, that's not a smart thing to say ever. But I just think, like, how do you talk to people if you're worried about their health? Or do you change it from weight to health? Or what's the best way to approach a husband, a man who's, you know, men don't want to be like, we're not vulnerable. We don't want to talk about our feelings. We're not going to be like, yeah, I really struggle to make better food choices, right? You know, I mean, like, how does Ellen talk to her husband about this? Anybody got tip?
Well, with any these conversations, whether it's concerns about a child eating too little or an adult eating too much or all the different presentations that we might see, I think having those difficult conversations is important. how we do that is also equally as important. A lot of people who have eating disorders are very prone to shame and feel a lot of shame already. Yeah. They feel like, why is this so difficult? Everyone else is able to eat normally. I can't. And so they're very prone to shame. And so anything that we do that might add to that is going to become probably something that makes it even worse. So the ways that we have these conversations, I think, is really important. What I tend to encourage people to do is to talk about non-judgmental language, using words like, I've noticed that you are eating more than normal, or that probably isn't even so good, but I've noticed A, B, and C, you know.
So these are, how hard this conversation is.
No, it is. I mean, and trying to think specifically about this individual, but like thinking about like, these are the things I've observed. So you're not judging. It's not like I've noticed you're eating too much. It's more like I've observed these things. Those things make me a little, I'm concerned about those things. So then you're bringing in your own experience with it. It's not that, you know, your feelings, but this is my feelings about this. I'm concerned. I really think you'd benefit from having an assessment. That's all you're asking. You're not asking them to make changes even on their own, but I'm asking you that it would be good to have an assessment with somebody who's knowledgeable about this, to just follow up with that. And to me, that's the best way, because I think as a parent, if we start nagging, if we're a spouse and we start being the one nagging, we're probably not going to be very effective.
Right. But if you sure you want to eat that?
Yeah, probably not the best route to go. But if we can have those non-judgmental, observational, this is how it makes me feel, here's how I think you'd really benefit from an assessment. Can we go to the website together and find somebody who might be able to help with that?
Yeah, is it beneficial to talk to, I mean, with men, to talk about health instead of weight or food? Like, I'm worried, I want you around, I love you, I want you to live. Like, the way you're eating is gonna kill you. I mean, that's just fact, isn't it?
I don't think some fear-based things are generally helpful at all. Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a motivator. The same way that it's not a motivator for tobacco cessation.
We probably already know that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I do want to get to Daniel, who's been waiting. Ellen, thank you so much for that call. And maybe Daniel has some insight that might help. So pay attention. Daniel, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi.
Lost Daniel.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now.
Okay, sorry. Hey, longtime listener. Thank you. And it's a really great conversation. I struggled understanding eating disorders most of my life. I'm very empathetic, but I just couldn't understand how you could take something so wonderful as food and get, you know, that real estate in your mind, like you were talking about. That is really what happened to me once I became, all my schooling became linked to the VA GI Bill funding, and I was seeing tapes on a monthly basis at my unit. To measure my body size, which is a strange way. I think the form of measuring this, I think it's about 100 years old, but it basically disqualifies you on weight and makes you have to take a tape to your body, which I had never done outside of a tailor my whole life. And just the action of doing that on a monthly basis and being like on the verge of possibly losing this funding and my family's livelihood, it's just strange how I became completely obsessed with that part of my life, of, you know, what I was putting in my mouth every day. And I went to eating bad diets and really extreme starvation and hard workouts for 4 or 5 hours at a time, and really putting myself through the kind of things I've oftentimes not struggled to understand how athletes do to themselves and harm themselves. And I just, I've developed a really healthy relationship with food these days, but I think it's largely due to the medication I was on. I just had, after I got out of the Army, I had a hypertensive emergency, and just decided I wanted to be the best dancer at my daughter's wedding. So I just took whatever medication it took, and I'm on this semaglutide Ozempic. And have lost like a quarter of my body weight, and I'm exercising every day with my wife. And most importantly, I'm on the ingredients diet, where I really think about the things that I'm making my body out of. And it just goes back to what my grandma said, you are what you eat. And it took me a lot of decades and a really bizarre turn. And it just took a dark turn where you're just worried all the time about the way your body size impacts everything else in your life. And it's a strange sort of thing to be overwhelmed by at such a late age in my life after going so many years without caring. So I wanted to share with you guys because I think about it a lot, and I don't get a chance to let other people know that it's not only normal for men to feel just completely broken up about their image, but it can happen when you least expect it, you know, to somebody who, I mean, I led physical fitness in my unit. I was very active, but it's that all that lean muscle that put me over the weight limit and made everything about the right way that tape measure stood every month. So thank you again, and sorry for talking so long.
All right. No, Daniel, thank you. We're running up against, and I want to give them a chance to respond to some of the stuff you were talking about. Who wants to start us off?
Well, I'll just say that exactly what you're saying, Daniel, the efforts and part of the military and VA and all of those things, we do know that individuals in the military are at higher risk for eating disorders for many of the reasons that you mentioned. And so I thank you for drawing attention to that. So that's one part that I'll add. And I appreciate you sharing as a man how that can just, you don't expect it to happen, but once you start the process, it can quickly snowball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, too. What I was hearing from that is the outdated methods of assessing for health or assessing for weight. And that's not only a difficult conversation, a difficult component to have in the military or for males, but it's difficult for spouses. It's difficult when you go see your medical doctor, those questions and the outdated assessment styles.
I mean, a well-built running back in the NFL will be obese on the BMI.
Absolutely. Exactly. Right. We really discourage, we very much discourage use of BMI as a predictor of individual health.
Yeah. I really do appreciate, Daniel. That's, I think, a great way to kind of wrap up the show, but because of that sharing of that story. And the thing that really jumped out at me is the idea of like the shame that you were talking about and him having to go in and get measured every month and like think about like, oh, did I lose that? And then becoming obsessed with that. So that's really, so we got about a minute left, and I'd like to give each of you a chance to talk just specifically about what would you say to boys or men or families, you know, about eating disorders. Jenny, you want to start us?
I guess I would start by just saying, regardless of who you are, whether you're a man, transgender, all of the female, everybody who is suffering deserves help. And so sometimes men can feel like they don't deserve help as much because they don't meet that stereotype of what it's supposed to be, or they're not sick enough, or all of these things. They're not used to.
It's not strong to ask for help.
It's not strong to ask for help. And so I would just encourage that boys and men who are struggling and suffering, that they deserve help and that they deserve to have people who can help them have a better relationship with their body.
All right. Becca?
Yeah, I definitely echo what Jenny said. Everyone's deserving of help, all sizes, all ages, all genders. And if you feel comfortable, reach out to someone. I think it's a good step.
Grace?
Yeah, absolutely. For clinicians who are interested in learning more, you can go to the National Eating Disorders Association. There's NAMEDinc.org.
All right, and take advantage of the Project Echo. That information will be available on our website. That's all the time we have for today. My thanks to Grace Schumacher, Jenny Loudon, and Becca Kirian. Also, thanks to our audio engineer today, Chris Hyde, and to my producer, Madeline Rose. For all of us at Line One, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Until next time, I'm Prentice Bemberton. Have a great day, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.